Well, if you're here visiting for the first time, I want you to know that you are in luck today because you are actually going to get two sermons for the price of one. We are going to do two messages today. We had one that was planned, talking about science and the Bible, and we're going to still give you a portion of that, but then we also had another events that have been going on that are sort of overtaking, and so some things on my heart that I'm going to share at the end of that. Well, a mom is awake in her bedroom, and there is a real bad thunderstorm that's going on outside, and she's concerned about her very small son. And then there is this tremendous flash of lightning and crash of thunder. So she starts down the hallway because she knows that he's going to be terrified. But much to her surprise, he's coming down the hallway towards her with a big smile on his face. And he says, "Mom, you'll never guess what happened. I was looking out the window at the storm, and God took my picture." The faith of a little child, able to come up with a simple explanation for the meteorological wonder that is lightning. Fortunately, that is the view that many in our culture have regarding how people of faith address all complicated matters of science. Because, of course, it is common knowledge that science and the teachings of the Bible are in conflict, aren't they? Aldous Huxley, the famous novelist who was an atheist, once said the following: "Modern science has made belief in a transcendent God virtually impossible." Now, I find that very interesting, particularly in light of the fact that some of the world's greatest scientists were devoted followers of Jesus Christ and of the Bible. Men like Galileo, Kepler, Descartes, Pascal, and Newton, just to name a few. So what is it that has created this relatively modern phenomena of a divorce, if you will, between the Bible and science? This commonly held belief by many, even in the church, that the Bible is somehow refuted by science. A mindset that would lead well-meaning Christians to defend Christianity by saying that the Bible is only inspired when it addresses matters of faith, but is not inspired when it refers to matters of science. But think about that for a moment. Does it really make sense to you that God would go to such lengths to reveal spiritual truths to mankind in the Bible that we could not find anywhere else, but that he would not care enough to make sure that he got his scientific facts correct? In other words, God gets an A in religion, but an F in science. Does that make sense? No, if you believe as I do that God inspired all the writings of the Bible, then the Bible should withstand every test of its accuracy, philosophical, spiritual, historical, and yes, even scientific. And despite the disinformation that we are bombarded with daily, I want to tell you that rather than discrediting the Bible, science has actually enabled us to authenticate that God must have inspired this book. Because history is filled with examples of scientific theories that were in direct contradiction to the Bible at the time they were posed. But with the passing of time, it has been learned that it was the scientific theory and not the biblical account that has been found to be incorrect as new evidence has come to light. And I could give you so many examples of this, and Mark and I have talked, but maybe we'll do a whole cornerstone class and devote it just to some of those examples. But this morning, let me simply say, as you evaluate science and the Bible for yourself, here are just a couple of principles for you to apply in your evaluation. Principle number one, the Bible is not meant to be a science text. You see, when I claim that the Bible is without error, I am not saying that the Bible is meant to provide you with an exhaustive treatment of a subject. But although the Bible is not a science text, in those instances where the Bible does make a statement about science, it does so accurately. Principle number two, a statement of an individual in the Bible is not always meant to be scientific. And all I am saying here is that sometimes statements in the Bible are made from a human point of view, without regards to science. In other words, a speaker is simply describing the way an event appeared to them. Let me just give you an example of what I mean. Joshua. We can, the 10th chapter, 11th to 12th verses. As they fled before Israel on the road down from Beth Horon to Azekah, The Lord hurled large hailstones down on them from the sky, and more of them died from the hailstones than were killed by the swords of the Israelites. Now, here we go. On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, O sun, stand still over Gibron, O moon, over the valley of Ajalon. Now, some could read those verses and say, aha, bad science, as they would correctly point out that the sun always stands still. It is the earth that moves. But I think it is clear here that Joshua was not attempting to provide a scientific explanation of what occurred that day. He was merely describing what it looked like to him. And we do that all the time, don't we? Husbands, if you are with your wife at the beach, and the two of you have risen early to watch the sunrise, as you hold her in your arms and gaze at the beauty of that sight, you don't then say to her, isn't that a romantic earth rotation, do you? At least I hope you don't. If you do, you fail being romantic 101. No, you will say, isn't that a romantic sunrise? There is nothing scientific or unscientific intended in your statement, just as the writer of Joshua was not making a scientific statement in the passage we just read. Then a third principle. The Bible is science's greatest fan. In fact, if you study history, you will find that the Bible is actually the book that gave birth to science. Because you will find that science only developed rapidly in those parts of the world that were deeply influenced by the Bible, and in particular by the Genesis account of creation. Why is that, you might ask? It's because the creation story, as described in Genesis, tells us that God not only created man in his own image and gave him a brain, but also that God commanded mankind to subdue the earth, to become its master. Science and, in a large part, education have been man's obedience to that particular command. On the other hand, other religions taught that the world was run by the moods of whimsical and unpredictable gods. And so, if you really believe that lightning was hurled by Zeus when he got angry, would you bother devoting energy to developing a theory of meteorology? If you believe that earthquakes were caused by elephants upon whose backs the earth rested, those elephants shaking, would you bother developing a science of seismology? See, it was the study of creation in the Bible that was the impetus for modern science. And that is why I find it so ironic when people say you can't be a real scientist and still believe in divine creation, when the truth of the matter is that it was creationists who gave the world science in the first place. And so now I want us to talk a little bit about some of this, about creation and evolution. And since this is such a tough topic, I'm going to ask Pastor Mark to come up here and help me with this. So he's going to come up on the stage. Why don't you help me pull this back so you and I aren't blocked. Okay. Here we go. All right. So, Mark, for starters, share with us, why all the confusion?
I mean, a lot of it has to do. Am I plugged in? Yeah. A lot of it has to do with things aren't defined very clearly. When people talk about evolution, what really do they mean? That needs to be asked, because you'll hear people say things, oh, evolution's clear. You just look at those gypsy moths years ago in England. You see how they adjusted their color to the environment. That proves evolution. Well, there's a very important distinction. Within the realm of evolution, there is microevolution and macroevolution. As a Christian, I have absolutely no problem with microevolution. It exists. When you go to the definition of science, science is that which is the study of the nature of the world we live in, and it's a study by observation and experiment. Well, you can see that within a species, they change and adapt. The trouble is, people will then go beyond that and make assumptions about, well, things change from species to another species. That is not observed in pure science. And that's where the rub is. So when people say, oh, evolution's clear, we observe it, I would say yes. As a Bible-believing Christian, absolutely, you can see it and you can observe within a species or a kind. But what you will not see is when it jumps from one species to another. And so definition, I think, is really important. Microevolution, absolutely true. It's observable. Macroevolution, no, it's not observable. It's not scientific.
Can you give us some examples of what you're talking about?
I think sometimes people are in a rush to prove one theory over another. And some of you may remember, I'm an engineer by training. Some will call me an engine nerd. So I like looking at the science pages and papers and websites. And about 6 months ago, there was this skeleton that was discovered in Germany. It was unveiled to the public. And they nicknamed it Ida. And it was this little primate-like creature. And everyone was breathless. This is proof. This is the missing link. This proves that there's a common ancestor between human beings and lemurs. And it got a lot of publicity. A big book was rushed out as a coffee table book with nice pictures. National Geographic came out and did a documentary on it. Everyone said, this is it. This is a missing link. Well, less than a month ago, there was a little, oops, we've done a DNA search on it. And to make a long story short, people who are not Bible-believing, we're doing some research and said, there's no chance this is the missing link. But it didn't get any of the fanfare that this original thing got. All that happened was it got this little, you know, buried in the back pages, almost like an obituary. Oops, Ida wasn't the missing link. You know, the reality is we see these so-called missing links discovered almost every year. But then you pay attention, you'll see that a lot of them just kind of drift off the scene.
Share with us some of the ways that you see for science and Bible to work.
I think, as your last point, that science really is a great tool pointing people towards God. Science really should be a worship experience. When you think of this world, when you observe this world that God has made, and the fact that this world is fallen, and you still see the order in it, it's stunning. I will never forget my senior year in high school. I was visiting a college. I sat in on an engineering physics class, and the professor was doing some complicated math to describe some processes in nature. The guy who was hosting me was a Christian, and he slid a note to me saying, "Isn't it amazing, just like someone made this world?" And I thought, wow, that's really true. The more you study science, the more it should point you towards someone made this world. A field that's just now opening up is the fine-tuning of this world that we live in, and that how if things are just slightly off, the whole thing would blow up. It would fall apart. The odds of all the different forces from electromagnetic to nuclear to gravitational being in the perfect tension they are, the odds are it's impossible if someone didn't put them together. Fred Hoyle, who was one of the great scientists of the 20th century, he was an astronomer, in one of his writings said, "Nothing has shaken my atheism like seeing how finely tuned this universe is." So studying science should point us towards God. And one example that I'd like to share is that of the giraffe. I shared this a few months ago, and I hope it's kind of funny, but I hope that's because it'll stick with you. I want you to think about the giraffe and think about how the giraffe came to being. You know, if it's true that we all evolved and we all just came from some cell that slithered up onto the lakeshore and then, you know, started becoming whatever, then the giraffe had to evolve from something. And really, all a giraffe is, if you think about it, is basically a horse-type thing with a long neck. That's what the evolutionists would have you believe, but nothing could be further from the truth. If you look at basic evolutionary books, you will see, and I need Stan to show this, you will see the giraffe's predecessor looking like a neckless giraffe. You'll see a sketch of that, an artist's impression of a neckless giraffe. And this poor gormless creature will be looking at trees and going, "I can't reach the leaves, I can't reach the leaves." And you'll see these pictures drawn, and by the end, you've got this thing with a 20-foot neck. And all it needed was a neck extension. But think about the logic. By the time that creature's neck grew to be big enough, it would have starved to death. So, I mean, that's a non-starter to begin with, but I'll even give you that. Let's say over the generations, the giraffe was able to get this neck that made it tall enough to reach the leaves that it needed to eat. The trouble is this. With the neck as tall as it is, somehow the heart had to be strong enough to get the blood all the way up to the brains, or otherwise you'd have pretty stupid giraffes. So the giraffe proportionally has a neck. It has a heart that is bigger than other animals of its mass. But that is because the giraffe has to get blood all the way up to its brain, which is a good thing. But the trouble is, You've seen a giraffe drink. It's kind of a very awkward thing where it goes like this and then it finally gets its neck down into the water. The giraffe's neck, the heart is so strong that it would force the blood down its neck so fast that it would blow out the blood vessels around the brain. That would be a bad thing. Safaris would not be fun if the landscape of Africa was littered with giraffes with blown out brains. So the giraffe has something else around its brain that other animals don't, and that is it has this spongy-like material of really small blood vessels. And the purpose of those is that they catch the blood. So they're like shock absorbers for the blood. So when the giraffe bends down like this, instead of the blood rushing down and blowing out its brain, the blood all gets absorbed by this spongy material and the giraffe can have a drink of water. Amazing how that happened just by chance. But it gets better because you imagine this couple of giraffes go to the watering hole and Mr. Giraffe says, all right, it's my turn to take a drink, honey. And she says, okay. And so he manages to go down. Crisis averted. The sponge captures all the blood. He can have a drink of water. But then Mrs. Giraffe says, hey, look, honey, there's lions. And Mr. Giraffe would rush up with his head to run away, but he'd black out because the sponge material would keep all the blood so it couldn't go down to his body so he could run away. But that sponge-like mass of blood vessels around his brain have release valves all in the back. And so when the giraffe lifts his head up quickly to escape from prey, all the blood rushes out and it can run. And I want you to see there's examples like this all over the world that we live in. Things just don't happen by chance. There's no way you can tell me that over thousands, millions of years, a neckless giraffe became a giraffe as we know it today. There's so much involved in this. Everything points out there is a creator. You'll see a verse on the screen in a minute. You look at the world around you, and it points to the fact that there is a creator. So science really, you know, Christians need never fear science. Science, if it's done properly, is the observation of truth. And science will point you towards the creator. We as Christians should love science. I'd love to see more Christians going into the sciences and making the great discoveries. It's a great thing. We have a great God, and the world around us screams out, God made me. And God, when he created this world, you can see he has a sense of humor. He is an incredible artist. As Dave shared earlier as we sung, creation screams out, God made me, and the God who made me is fantastic.